D-Base, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are proudly presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Freeman, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, it's been about a week since we heard from Predators players and Andrew Burnett. We have yet to hear from Barry Trotz. We were expecting to hear from Barry Trotz this week. It doesn't appear that's going to be the case. The longer it takes, the more likely it seems he could be considering a coaching change. At least that's what my gut tells me. Do you have any new information as to what the Predators might be deciding on with Andrew Burnett?
Not yet, but I don't think that your feeling is wrong necessarily. You remember last time they made the coaching change with John Hines. Did Barry not hold a press conference first and then go through the process?
Yes, he did.
John Hines was a part of that news conference.
Yes.
And then so it was 2 years ago. It was in 2023, and I remember the date. It was May 30th, right?
That sounds right, yes.
Yeah, so, and remember, you know, Barry took some heat for the way that one was done, and so we always try to say, okay, is our process correct? Is that the way we want to look at things? And I'm sure also, I do think that even though he's a manager now, he's sympathetic to coaches in the sense that there's a way everything should be handled, right? So I don't blame him at all if he says, you know what, we're going to do it differently this time. I'm going to make my decision and then I'm going to come out and meet an announcement. Now, the one thing I can tell you guys is that I did hear that, you know, some of the comments from the exit meetings with both players and coaches, I think it took a couple of days to at least wrap the heads around them or say, okay, now that all of this stuff is out in the open, how do we feel about it? I definitely got that impression that Burnett's comments, Marchessault's comments, and some of the other comments made gave people pause or had people think, okay, do we feel differently about everything? How do we feel about the fact that all of this kind of got aired publicly? You know, I think those of you in Nashville, you kind of knew this existed. I don't know that it was a huge surprise to you guys, but anytime like it gets aired and like I, you know, personally, I don't have a problem with it in the sense that people should be honest. And as a media member, you know, we can't complain that people are boring or they don't tell us the truth and then complain when they do tell us the truth. But I think sometimes for an organization, seeing that kind of stuff aired publicly, and people kind of sit back and say, okay, how do we feel about all this? And I do think that happened in the Predators case.
Elliot, one reason why you're the best in the business is because in that answer, you led me directly to my next question, and you covered a lot of it there. I know you heard the comments from Jonathan Marchessault last week, and we've talked a lot about Marchessault and how he's unafraid to bite his tongue. Not bite his tongue, I should say. He does not like to bite his tongue. I'm wondering what you thought of his comments specifically, just because of, you know, Steven Stamkos made similar comments, but he did so in a more captainly diplomatic way. Precisely.
Yes.
So the way that Marchessault aired those grievances, for lack of a better phrase, what did you make of how he addressed the question about adjustments with Andrew Burnett?
Look, I think this. I've known Marchessault for a long time now. I've dealt with him for a bit. And he's one of those people that if you put a microphone in his face or if you go stand up to him and ask him a question, you are going to get an honest answer. As you said, Adam, he does not sugarcoat things.
There's no filter.
And there's no, well, you're right. There is no filter, yes. He's gonna tell you exactly what he thinks. You know, I'll say this. I want to be very careful about one thing here. I didn't see his comments. I only read them. And I saw Stamkos. I did not see Marchessault. And the one thing I just want to say about that is sometimes it's like reading an email or a text. It can be meant one way and it can be interpreted another way. All I can say is this. Let's just say that Marchessault is answering a question honestly, and he's talking about what he thinks needs to be better. Even if he means it in a benign way, I could see a coach getting, I could see Andrew Burnett not liking that. I could see him being upset about that. I can see him say, and I can see other people in the organization saying, that's not something that we like that you said publicly, even if he meant it in a benign way. Because after a season like this one, your fan base, your ticket-buying public, and even some people in your organization who have decision-making power can look at that, point at that, and say, hey, look what one of our players is counting on here. And, you know, it's been a hard season in general around Marchessault. He struggled a bit, and I think that some people will say, hey, should you be saying that? Now, again, I read them. I didn't see them, so it leaves some open room for interpretation there. But, you know, I think after a year like this one, Adam, everybody's sensitive. Everybody's upset. Everybody's disappointed. There's nobody who looks good after this year. And I think, and you know that your ownership is demanding answers. Everybody in the organization is demanding answers. And put it this way, I think that I just think that people don't want to hear that kind of honesty after. I mean, I have no problem with it, but I think internally the organization would probably say we don't need that kind of honesty after a season like this one.
Elliot Friedman is with us. And Elliot, I do think his tone was better. I think it comes across when you listen to the, 7 to 10 minutes that he was actually, he answered a lot of questions, and he did take a lot of accountability for his own struggles, which I give him credit. Yes. So in the context of all of that, I don't think it was as bad as it was. And like you pointed out, when you just read these specific quotes from the one question that had everybody's attention, but that's how it works, right? And he's got to understand that as well. So I will give him a lot of credit for, there were several questions where he said, I didn't do as well as I needed to do. I've got to be better. So I will give him that, but that it's definitely something to watch.
Yeah. So, you know, and like I said, about Marchessault, he's an honest guy, and that is why he is that's why he's gotten to be where he is, because that's his personality. It took a long time for him to get developed into a star. He had a harder road than a lot of other players. He's a self-made man. I really respect it. I just know, the one thing is, I live in Toronto, which is probably the hottest NHL market there is. I know here, if those comments were made at the end of a season, even if you meant them in a totally benign way, it would lead to a 10-alarm blaze. And I understand, I was watching the Boston press conference yesterday, and people were like, well, you know, the Bruins just missed the playoffs. They should come out of there and stop being so defensive. No, that's not what happens. When you miss the playoffs, you're even more defensive. Your back is really up. So, I just think that even though Marchessault may not have meant anything bad by that at all, everybody in Nashville, their back is up right now. It was a hard year. It was a disappointing year. And everybody's sensitive to everything that gets said. That's what happens.
I was listening to your latest 32 Thoughts. You guys are talking about an exciting playoff series. And I do want to ask you about a couple things on that. But the coaching carousel, I was really taken by your interpretation of the Vancouver exit meetings and the exit press conference by their general manager, Jim Rutherford, because I wonder if everybody's kind of waiting around saying, oh, is Rick Tocchet going to hit the market here? And if so, we may have to wait on what we're doing, because there could be a lot of dominoes that come from that. So give me your thoughts on that, because that's a different kind of disappointment when you just miss as opposed to everything goes wrong for the start. But think about this time last year, Rick Tocchet and Andrew Burnett were in a playoff series, and a lot of people were saying one of these two guys is going to be the coach of the year.
Yep. The coach of the year, you should just not accept it anymore, Willie. I think that's what it comes down to. Just don't even take it. You know, Vancouver, like you guys, had a really hard year. Things really blew up in their organization they were not expecting. And so that's, you know, that's kind of, it was a hard year. And the other thing, too, is, and I do understand this, like, as a guy who has lived his whole life in Canada and understands how hockey is up here, like, I would never run away from this. I believe in high risk, high reward. Okay. And if you are successful here, you are, like, as a player, you're a god forever. You don't even have to win all the time. Or, like, there's a lot of Canucks who obviously never won a Stanley Cup, but they are gods in their city because they competed really hard for that team for a long time. Like, one of them I work with, Kevin Bieksa, who, of course, was beaten up by Mike Fisher once. But, you know, I think that Tocchet, he was tired at the end of this year. It was, the team took a step back. I think Hughes is the captain, Quinn Hughes. It's clear to me that they've let everybody know that his future is uncertain. And I just wonder if part of it is, I think he feels he has a certain worth. And to this point, they haven't hit it. But secondly, I also think there's a part of him that looks at it and says, is he just tired of that spotlight? And is he uncertain about where that team is going? And that every day that goes by, you sit there and you wonder, is he looking at something else? Now, technically, I don't believe he has permission to talk to anybody else. But, you know, you can definitely see what the landscape is, Willie. And I think that's what he's doing.
So I want to ask you about the Dallas-Colorado series, because Dallas was here to end the season. They played all of their guys.
Oh, they're awful.
And they were terrible. They got smoked, even though they scored a goal in the first shot of the game, 16 seconds into the game. I thought they were a mess, but here they are. I don't want to say they're shutting Colorado down, but to hold them to one goal in their building with that atmosphere last night with the Landeskog, I was very impressed on how Dallas has sort of pulled it together, despite the Red Sea parting and the one goal that they did score. Where was everybody on the ice for the starts?
Oh, but despite
that breakdown, at the end of the game, they give up one goal in Denver. That's hard to do.
Well, I think the one thing, and the thing about that is they slowed that game to a crawl, which is probably their best way to win. And they're missing their best player and one of their best forwards. The one thing is the goalie has really come back. And they had to defend a 4-minute power play where 3 minutes of it was in overtime, and he was incredible. Like, I really thought if you have goaltending, you have a chance, as you guys know. And Ottinger, who really struggled at the end of the regular season, has been excellent. And he was excellent last night. But to me, Dallas said, look, if we let them run a track meet around us, we're doomed. And they didn't let them run a track meet. They slowed the game down. They slowed it to a crawl. And they've given themselves a chance. So I think between the goaltending, the pace of play, and that, you know, you have to compete, and their guys are all competing, they've given themselves a chance in this series. It's going to be interesting when or if Heiskanen shows up here, the defenseman, because if he can come back and he can make an impact, that's big, big news for Dallas.
So one observation that I think Adam and I agree on, when you watch that series, which to me is the most interesting from the Predators' perspective, just watching those two teams specifically, there's a lot of good ones, but Mikko Rantanen still looks like he's out of place with Dallas. He hasn't made a big impact. He's flashed, but he doesn't look like the monster that he was with the Avalanche. And at the same time, with Marty Natchez and all the players that they turned over, they had a rent-a-team, right? They turned over half. These were 49 players. but they still don't look like they have that absolute juggernaut where you're when those three guys were on the ice, Makar, McKinnon, Rantanen, it looked unstoppable at times. They look like they've lost some fangs there.
Well, I think that the one thing when it comes to Colorado, I think the one thing is that, like I said, the Stars realize they cannot let this turn into a track meet. They have to be smart. They cannot. They have to be in position. They have to be structured. I definitely think that even some of their best players in Dallas are sacrificing offense for defense. Like the part of it is they're simply saying, guys, like, we cannot make mistakes. We have to be disciplined. And I've seen situations where, you know, maybe in a regular season game, a guy tries to make a move or a guy tries to make something happen, and they're like, not here. And I think with Colorado, that's the way you have to do it. The one thing I'll say about Rantanen is, and I don't think you're wrong, like he got run over on the first shift by Landeskog last night, but he made a great play on the winning goal. And you always wonder, like, now does he leave last night feeling really good about himself? Like, I just made a play that led us to the winning goal and put us up 2-1 in the series. Does that give him the burst, the confidence to think, okay, I'm going here? As you guys know, a lot of sports is between the ears. And Rantanen should feel really good about himself today. And I'm curious to see how that affects him for the rest of the season.
Elliot, before we let you go, I'm going to put you on the spot. And I just want you to know that your answer is going to be sent to the city that you don't say. So just be prepared. Tonight, Ottawa will host its first playoff game since 2017. Yeah. Tomorrow, Montreal will host its first playoff game in a full house since 2017 because the Canadiens hosted playoff games during COVID. Which atmosphere are you expecting to be more electric?
It's Montreal. It's not even an answer. And yes, that's not going to make me very popular in Ottawa. But Adam, you've been on the road. There's no atmosphere. If you take all 32 atmospheres in the NHL and put them at their most electric, there's nobody like Montreal.
I would agree with that.
Okay, I think we all agree on that. There's no doubt about it. One thing that I think will be unique about Ottawa, and I think people can relate here at Nashville because the Predators battled this from day one with the Red Wings fans and the original six for a while.
Oh, yeah.
It was the Blackhawks fans. But you guys talked about it a lot. Like for a time, Elliot, and it really ticked off the Chicago fans. Nashville put up barriers that made it as tough as they could possibly make it for a Blackhawk fan to get a ticket because, to their credit, if you wanted to sell your ticket to a Blackhawk fan, there was a Blackhawk fan willing to pay whatever they needed to pay to get in. And Nashville shut that down. And boy, did you hear some belly aching in Chicago. Did Ottawa do anything like that to try to keep these fans to a minimum?
They definitely made it a little harder. I saw some quotes today that they think that only like 1,000 fans or 1,000 tickets went either outside Ottawa or outside their quote-unquote fan base. Like, they worked at it. You know, the question always is, like, who resells the tickets, right? I always wonder about this going in. Like, is Ottawa going to monitor who actually shows up and uses the seats? I think teams do that. So I'm curious to see tonight if that goes anywhere. Actually, it's funny. I was out this morning grabbing a coffee in a local coffee shop, and I ran into a couple of Leaf fans there. And one of them told me that he got tickets to Saturday's game, game four, and they're going on a party bus with eight of them, and they're driving to the game, they're going to the game, and then they're driving home in the party bus with a driver after the game. And I said to him, I only have one request. And the guy goes, what is it? And he says, you have to have a sign. I said, you're cheering for the Leafs? He goes, yeah. I go, you have to have a sign that says, Kyle Bukauskas gave me these tickets. And Kyle is my podcast co-host. He lives in Ottawa. So I'm really hoping they do it. Like, that's my sole goal here.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, joining us on D-Mace, Fingan, and Donick. Presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, great stuff as always. We'll talk next week.
All right. Take care, guys. Have a great week.
You as well. Elliot Freeman on the program. A lot of interesting stuff there. The Stanley Cup playoffs have been excellent so far. If you haven't sat down to watch some of these games, you absolutely should. But we are going to get back into NFL draft talk coming up next at 615-737-1025. One ESPN analyst details how the Titans can ace their draft. Do we agree? We'll discuss that coming up next. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game.